Welcome to Beyond the Design, and today we have with us Simone Humoy, the creative force behind a studio renowned for its bespoke furniture, millwork, and interior architecture. With a foundation in traditional Mexican carpentry and a global reputation for excellence, Simone's work elevates materials and celebrates the beauty of craftsmanship. Let's dive into his journey and the story behind his exceptional creations. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me, Greg.
Absolutely. Sorry if I crucified your name. It's the first show of this new season, so I'm still waking up.
Oh, pardon. No worries.
Well, Simone, you founded your studio in 1991. What inspired you to start your own design practice, and what were those early days like for you?
Yeah, well, when I started out, well, first of all, being born and raised in Mexico, the particularities of how things work here in a country very different from the U.S. It was a place where I had access to a lot of hand labor that could create my designs in a very artisanal manner, and that was a very, very big advantage to be able to have things actually be done. And back in those days, I actually came back from college in 86. It was during that later part of the 80s that I started doing a lot of my own designs and works. And I would go to local shops that were, they were just small carpentries, and you would take them your drawings, and they would translate what you were drawing into your physical object. And this particular carpentry that I worked with was in right next to a trailer shop where they would do the old trucks. They used to have these bars that you would put for the suspension, where they would hit the bars to make the arc in order to, you know, for the suspension to work. And so it was very, very rudimentary metal place, but they would do all my metal. So anything that I would need to do in metals, they would bang it and, you know, transform it, do my finishes, everything. And it was like an experiment laboratory, you would say. So that was
trial by error.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool, I would say, because it did put out a way for me to actually do physical stuff, you know. And I started out with family, as you know, family are the best guinea pigs for,
yeah.
You know, you ask them what do they need, and they normally say yes to everything. So that's right. That's easy. And so I started doing children's bedrooms, but very tiny children's, because I started to play around with the spaces inside, taking into account the scale of the kid with the big room. So we would do crazy things of ramps and different levels and sleeping quarters at different heights and working and playing, and everything was supposed to be made to the scale of the individual, of the user. And that's how it started, pretty much. And from there, I kind of shifted to more serious furniture, again, with family. Like first, I can recall a desk that I did for the office of my brother-in-law, and he took that, and from there it started, you know, to grow word of mouth, you know. those were the origins, really.
Well, your work celebrates traditional Mexican carpentry. How has your heritage shaped your approach to design and craftsmanship?
Yeah, well, I guess there was always that element of the hand labor that I embraced. Mm-hmm. At one point, it had to do a lot with the limits of technology that we had here in Mexico. And but once I figured out that the quality could get up there, you know, even all handmade, it became a little bit of a thing that we still process things a lot by hand, although of course we have much more machinery now, and we do incorporate a CNC machinery and, you know, big, you know, wood cutting machinery, metals and whatnot. But still, the ensembles and the tracings and everything and the fine tuning of everything coming together, it's really done by hand.
Well, over the years, your studio has developed a distinct aesthetic. How would you describe your design philosophy, and how has it evolved?
Yes, well, I've always been very keen on being very transparent with materials. So normally I let the materials speak for themselves as naturally as possible, instead of trying to, we seldom use lacquers, for example, you know.
Right.
It's very, very seldom that we do something like that. Of course, we have done things with lacquers when it's the thing to do. But basically, I do everything showcasing the materials themselves. And the other part that I like a lot, because it's what got me a little bit to where I am also, is that this fact of these different traits of the artisan work, where you have a stonework and metalwork and glass and wood, and how this can come together in a single shop, you know, to ensemble these materials, is something that I like a lot. I embrace a lot that part, you know, to get these different colors and textures from the materials themselves, you know, and how you can combine them together.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking about materiality, your designs are grounded in honest materials like wood, stone, and metal. How do you choose your materials, and what role do they play in your creative process?
Well, I would say that there's two elements of the materials. One is how the transformability is very important, you know, and the other is the aesthetics of the material in itself. So, and both are very important, you know. I might find a beautiful titanium thing, you know, that I love, but if it's hard for me to transform it, then it's hard for me to use it as such. So I try to see a lot of play on those materials come to what's the transformability of them. How can I transform them in-house as much as possible? Then I do some processes I do outsource some processes when I can't deal with them here. But I try to see what I can do mostly in my shop. And that determines a little bit, okay, this is a good material to use. And this is not a good material to use. And then at the aesthetics of the material, because they do involve colors and they do involve textures and they do involve a lot of other stuff. And that's the second part, the aesthetic part of how they come together with the other materials that I want to blend them with.
Your studio handles everything from custom furniture to turnkey interiors. Can you walk us through your process of turning an idea into a finished space or a finished piece?
And you're talking about like the full interior design?
Mm-hmm.
How that happens?
What's the process in you creating a piece versus creating an entire space for a client?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's two things we do here. One is a complete custom furniture that is something applied to a very specific use, very specific space. And the other is something more of a line furniture that we also carry out, which is something that we can build more universal. And we have pre-selected finishes, just like any other furniture manufacturers, you know, it sells retail. Right. So for the part that is more of the custom, it's pretty much the same process. If we go into an already set space and we come in to do a specific furniture for that space, which is already turned around. And of course, when you go like that, you take into account a lot of factors that are already there, you know, the light and the colors of the materials that are there and the function of the material of the room, how it's supposed to come together. And then you do your take on that, on how you want that to mend with your design. And in the case of a full interior, you know, you do the same thing pretty much, but with your box that they're delivering you to you, you know, your blank space. Of course, you take into account all of your windows and lights and everything, how the room is composed of. And then, of course, the client, who's the user, the end user, their necessities, what are they looking for, what did they connect with in your specific design language? Mm-hmm. Because that's something that we have a lot in our case, that most of the clients come to us because they've seen something that they liked from us. So rather than being like the source of, okay, here is what I want, and this is my, and bring, you know, cutouts of magazines, and that normally doesn't happen. It's much more, okay, I know what you do, I like what you do, this is what I want, and this is my necessities, go at it, you know? And
so create.
Yeah, create, go for it, you know? Much, much better, I would say. But yes, you start sculpting around, you know, all of these elements around, and a little bit more challenging, because then you are controlling a lot more. Yeah, the floorings and ceilings and lighting, you know, fabrics on the walls or drapery, you know, the whole deal. And within that, we do combine a lot of line furniture, which means pieces that we like and that we buy from manufacturers, and pieces that we do also for the same spaces. So they all come together, you know. So there's a lot of built-ins. That's basically where we come in. I would say normally everything that has to do with the complex pieces like libraries and, let's say, a bar, or, you know, big dining rooms, that type of stuff is normally the stuff that we jump into, because it's much easier to be able to control sizing, materials, everything on that type. And stuff like upholstery and chairs and, I mean, of course, light fixtures, we normally tend to specify those from manufacturers, you know, with what we want the final product to look like.
Right, right. Well, you've created unique and limited edition pieces for clients ranging from private residents to yachts. Is there a particular project or piece that stands out as especially meaningful to you? And that's kind of like your baby. It's part of your heart and soul, which I'm sure every piece is. But as an artist, is there something that really resonates and that was meaningful to you?
Yeah, I guess I used to be a lot more audacious, you could say, in my early years. Less carefree. I would, and we do have very dear projects that we were involved in the 90s, where one in particular that just crosses my mind was this. They asked us to design the interior of a theater in Mexico, mm-hmm. a public theater. And so we were going to do the paneling inside the theater, all of the side panels that had to be acoustic and reflective and all right. of that. And also the lobby of that space. And we came about and did very, very, you know, offbeat things because we could, and they let us do it pretty much. But just to give you an example, the main bar that we were going to put in there was going to be this massive piece of stone that was going to be in one piece that they brought from, you know, from the quarry. So just imagine a big block that was just to give an idea. It was close to 450, almost 5 meters long. It's 17 feet long, you know, 4 feet wide, 4 feet tall. It was like a ridiculous thing. So the theater was in construction and there was no floor. Still, where this thing was going to go, it was dirt, you know, they were the packed dirt.
Right.
And that was the only way. So they brought this thing and they just dumped it on the site. And so we did models and, you know, whatnot. And we had 5 people working with chisels, like the Egyptians.
Wow.
Tack, 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 forming this thing. It had kind of like a it did have a kind of like a boat shape, you know, it tapered out onto the one side. And so of course, with cranes and with little jacks, the small jacks that they used to raise trailers, that's how they would raise this thing and put some things to put it on the side, to work on the side, and then they would turn it around, work on the other side, then they would put it in. Then they put it into rollers, you know, and to like steel rollers, and started to push this thing, you know, into position with, of course, with cranes and with hoists and jacks and the whole thing, and started to move it. And it was like a ship, docking a ship, you know, kind of coming together, place it on a space that we did not have walls yet. That was very tricky because everything was going to be built around it, you know. Right. So we had to and then determine exactly where the finished floor was going to be. Because we could not mess with that, you know. It was very, very careful to raise this thing to exactly where the floor was going to be, because the floor would come right underneath this thing. It was going to be floating. So that was kind of like a challenging thing, but I still hold it very dear in my memories of something, you know, very, very special. We were very involved, you know, in the process, I would say.
Now, as you started your career in this journey in as an artist and a creative, is there anything particular that you were surprised that you didn't know that came about that kind of challenged your thought process?
Well, I don't know. I would say that an old teacher from Pratt, from New York, where I did my schooling, used to say, one seldomly responds out of the blues, you know? Which means that everything has to do with something that you've seen and you absorb everything. So you're constantly getting and learning things. And yes, from my processes, from when I started to now, it's been a journey of transformation of how you see stuff around, you know, all the time. Right. Yeah.
Well, designing for high-end spaces like hotels and offices comes with unique challenges. How do you balance functionality with the elevated aesthetic your clients expect?
The aesthetics is your language at the end of the day. You know, it's part of how you, it's something you develop, and it's almost like an actor, you know, the traits of an actor when he's, you know, and you choose the actor because you know what he's going to, how he's going to perform already somehow, you know, and I think that's the intrinsic language of a personal, the personal side of what you had collected, what you put out into the world, and like I said, a lot of the times it's that part, you know, that people come up to, you know, and respect, you know, it's, I might put it in this way. Like, for example, back in the '90s, I was completely infatuated with Philip Stark because I thought that he was a true genius, you know, coming up out with a whole different language. It would get me so excited to be in his spaces and see his proposals. And it was just so innovative, you know,
And thought provoking,
and everything, everything. So I was a really, really big fan. And of course, I would imagine that if I were a client, and that I was going to hire him to do something, I would just let him go. You know, I would not. Just like I would have complete confidence, and I don't care what he's going to do. I'm confident that he's going to come up with some genius idea, and it's gonna, and I'm gonna like it, you know. So I guess that's a little bit of the process that goes with clients and designers at some point, you know, that once they see and they grasp and they have this connection to your language and what you do and your aesthetics, then they kind of let you, you know, have your shot at it.
Go
with it and have a shot at it. Yes.
Creating those experiential environments. Well, your craft, your workshop is in Mexico City, correct?
Yep. Yeah, that's correct.
And you employ over 110 individuals. How do you maintain?
A little more now. It's now
a little
it's,
more?
Yeah, it's about 250 now, but yes.
Oh, wow. You have expanded quite a bit.
Well, yes,
How do you maintain a culture of craftsmanship and innovation with such a large team? How do you install the Simone Pamui aesthetic and tone and look and feel? I mean, I'm sure you have a lot of people asking you questions consistently. How do they extract that for information, and how do you express yourself to them of what is in your head?
Definitely, but very hands-on, for one thing. You know, I'm always trying to be close to the shop, seeing the processes come together. I might do changes in the processes. You know, okay, I messed here. Let's bring this down just a little bit further or wherever. But it has to do with, I guess it's something that it builds upon. You know, it's once you have established this language that you like or that you connect with, materials that are dear to you somehow, anything that follows from there, it's much easier to understand. Like if you find a new wood, for example, we tend to like woods that have grains and, you know, depending the application, of course. But right. Once you have this palette of colors that you are normally drawn into, this type of materials that you're normally drawn into, these type of textures you normally drive into, once you find something new on that realm, you connect to it. So I have a big design team here with me, and they're constantly bringing stuff to me. Hey, look, we found this. Oh, we found this thing. You know, I think this can be, and you see it and immediately you say, yeah, that this is, what do they say? Up our alley, you know?
right.
Exactly. You know, yes, this works. No, this doesn't work so well. This, you know, and that's how we gather a lot of the new materials. And then some of the processes we experiment here, you know, with some of the machines and, you know, doing sandblasting or doing etching or doing whatever things we have access to. We also experiment a lot, you know, and find, okay, this is something that we connect with. Let's put it out, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. What challenges have you observed in the industry over the past three decades, and how has your studio adapted to those challenges and changes?
Yes, well, the biggest change for sure is the everything that's becoming so much more automated nowadays. You know, like I said, I imagine back in the 80s in Mexico, my furniture was done basically all by hand. With a, you know, in that a lot of the cuts were even done with a saw, you know, with a manual saw on the woods. So that was extremely manual, you know, and then they would, you know, straighten them out with their, I don't know what they call them, you know, the hand lathes or whatever, you know. But but that's how they would do it. And of course nowadays it's a completely different language, and it comes together with all of the design implements on computers that have come together with the design field also, you know, of how to manipulate everything. So now it's everything come together. Okay, whatever you do here, you can put it in a program and that this machine is going to cut it and all that. So that's been a big change. As I told you before, I'm always trying to adapt to things that I can still manage to transform in my shop. You know, that's a very important part. Whatever I can do in my shop is something that I pull, you know, I explore more. But yes, that's a very big difference. Now we are using a lot of these machineries, a lot of these programs, and a lot of my designers, maybe all of them now, are directly computer-based designers. You know, they They draft in the computer, they design in the computer, they make the programs for the machines in the computer, everything's done in the computer. I myself, unfortunately, I'm very archaic, and I do everything extremely.
I hear you. I'm the same way. It's all pen to paper or pencil to paper. Or,
pen to paper and understanding the how bad that is in terms of efficiency. They have to print everything for me. I have to draw it. I have to bring it back. They have to bring it up, whatever. Right. But that's the personal thing. And I just been very hard to detach from that.
I completely
very hard for me
that.
In particular. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can't get up in the middle of the night and go to your computer and start, you know, if it's to the paper in your mind, you're creating as you're drawing it. So
a lot. Yeah. And it's just the process and it's just the getting used to it. That's
true.
All.
True.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what drives your passion and how do you ensure it remains at the core of your work?
My passion is driven by traveling, I would say, without a doubt. I mean, just experiencing and being out there in the world, that's the drive. That's the main drive. I am constantly going to museums, art fairs, musical. Very, very big fan of music, so I'm constantly going to classical concerts, jazz concerts, everything, even rock concerts. I adore all of that. All of the arts are very much in me. And I am constantly wanting to see more and more and more. It's just like this drive. And this is what feeds me for everything, basically.
It's part of your DNA.
It's part of the DNA. And that's I would say if I had to pinpoint that's what drives pretty much everything in me. It's just getting out there and seeing things, seeing. Yeah.
I think everyday life, you know, can bring so much if you look at it through a different lens, you know?
True, totally true.
Well, what's next for you and your studio? Are there any exciting projects or initiatives that you're currently working on?
Well, we've very, very recently, it's just about to open. So we're going to put up our first showroom. You know, we've never had a showroom in all of my career. We've never had a store of our own ever. And I don't know, this just came about because of certain circumstances, I would say. But also we thought that it could be something nice to put out together because of the structure that we have nowadays. So that's something very new. It's going to be a tiny little exposition space in Aspen, Colorado.
Oh, wow.
Which is close to where I live in Mexico City and in Vail, Colorado. Mm-hmm. So I spend half of the time here, half there. I do a lot of my design there. We built a lot of clients there. So basically our business is mostly 50-50%. 50 is like percent local in Mexico. All over, you know, mm-hmm. beaches and up on different cities and Mexico City, of course. And then the others are in the U.S., which basically is Miami, New York, Colorado, and Los Angeles as of now. And so being that proximity to Colorado, we thought we would put up a little exposition space, you know, mm-hmm. open to the public for sure, where we would display some of the furniture, the line furniture that we come up during the last years. That line of furniture is distributed right now with different channels of big stores, you know, that mm-hmm. import a lot of furniture from a lot of places, and they also sell our furniture as part of what they offer. And so in this showroom, we want to expose a little bit of that, but also have the opportunity of, you know, people to come and see the interior design work, the full interior design package that we were able to produce as well. So that's going to be a big one, I think, a new one. So that's one of the things. And a couple of years ago, we opened the second factory, actually, that is catering to hotel and hospitality. And that one is very different from from the shop we have in Mexico City. That one is more of a, it fabricates for other, you know, architects, designers, it's more about of a production facility, let's say.
Okay.
So it's a parallel thing that we're, so that seldom does anything that I design. The plant in Mexico is the one that has mostly the things that are designed here in house. Mm-hmm. So those are the new things. Yeah.
So where is this? Is this in Mexico as well?
Yes, it's in Mexico, but it's like 40 minutes away from where we are. It's close to a town called Toluca, you know, very close to Mexico City. So that's where we have the second plant, the second factory. Gotcha. Yeah.
Well, when you look back at your career, what do you hope your studio will be remembered for?
I guess I'd love to know that there was a keen attention to detail, you know, to the intricacies of seeing a piece of furniture and seeing stuff that has a lot to do with the detailed language inside of it, how it was put together. Anything that speaks of the design language, of course, you know, it's just like any other designer that outlives everybody, and there's still, you know, like big standards of, you know, people that you look up to all the time,
right.
You know, constantly. They're your gurus for a lot of stuff. I don't suppose my work is going to be any sort of that, but if it has just the possibility of being just a fraction of that, that's something that would be very nice to leave upon, you know, and to have future generations build upon it, you know. Yeah. I have now my nephew who's coming, who runs pretty much the show now, and he's very, you know, keen on learning, and, you know, that's where it has to go, you know.
As a creative and an artist, is there anything that you haven't tried that you still want to accomplish being on this journey and in this industry?
I mean, constantly I work with, lately, I met a friend from Pratt, from college, a very, very long time ago, as you can suspect. And we've always been very close as friends, also an industrial designer. But it's only until very recently that we started to get together, you know, to collaborate on, I guess, because both we have interesting and very broad projects as of now. And so we're seeing that this synergy can come together very nicely. And the projects that are coming along, not that I'm calling for them, you know, they've been showing to us, are just very exciting, because they go from, you know, from museums to concert halls to, you know, immersive experience, the spaces and things that I would have not really, you know, it wouldn't have come to my mind like that. It's they're just dropping, you know, let's say. And of course, it's very, very interesting and always very challenging. I remember the first time I got a commission for a boat, you know, it was a big thing, you know, and it was fascinating. Of course, the scales, the movements, everything that has to be so, so carefully thought of, so much different from a home. And and it was wonderful. And now, well, I had the fortune of doing several boats. So we've designed 4 boats already. And it's also always an incredible challenge.
Materiality is an important factor of your designs. Is there a material you could never design without?
No, not really. But I would say wood. Wood is my core material. It's just like, it just gathers so much of everything, you know. Just being your go-to thing. Mm-hmm. And it's been there for so many years for a reason, you know. It is an amazing material when you look at it as a whole. It's very, very special in all of its, and and best of it, it's a live material, you know, it's alive and it comes from a live thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. And it takes a form. You might want it to design a certain way, but it takes its own form as well.
Yes.
A life upon itself.
Yes. Absolutely. So yes, that I would say that if you told me about a core material, I would say that. Yeah, probably mm-hmm. that the wood is my go-to, my first go-to material.
Well, you told us about the one project that was rather challenging. Is there a project that you can think of that has your complete heart and soul in it? That's the one project you could be remembered for.
I can't really pinpoint one. There's of course, I do have my favorite homes that I've done for sure. Right. You know, and those are very dear to me. And yes, and if I need to show anybody that I need to show my work, these are the ones that come to my mind first and foremost, you know, your favorite homes. And the same goes for furniture. You have your little things that you did. I collaborated just recently with a piece of our, let's say it's a kind of a functional art. It was a vitrine based upon dancer, choreographer. From the 1930s, Ruth Page from the U.S. Mm-hmm. And it had to do with a choreography that Nisamu Noguchi did for her with a costume design. And we translated these forms into a vitrine where I collaborated with a very dear and very talented artist here in Mexico. And he works a lot with wood. And he does a lot of carvings in wood, so we did this piece, and it's something came out that I'm very proud of, and that I admire a lot the outcome of it. And so,
is there a dream collaboration besides Philippe Starck?
No.
Or is there a dream project that you'd want to work on that you have not worked on yet?
I've haven't worked in a museum, and I would love to do them. And there's little collaborations that are coming upon, but I'd love to do an art museum. You know, that's because it gathers so much of what I connect with and what I like, you know, and just the fact that the art is going to be the main protagonist of the space. That would be great. I would really look forward to doing something like that. Sometime.
Throughout your journey and travels, is there a favorite city that is a design inspiration for you?
Oof. No, there's so many cities that I adore and I love. It would be impossible, but they range from the old city of Cartagena, which is like it's a dream for me, mm-hmm. and I go back to it. Often, because I adore it. Two large cities like Paris. Nowadays, I'm infatuated with London. So yeah, these are wonderful. But of course, it's just the compound of traveling everywhere, and the more different the place that you travel, the more exciting it can be, and. But design-wise, I adore Barcelona, for example. There's something about that city, the buildings, just how the layout of the urban planning of the city, how you move around it. You have the scene and just the thing, the people and everything about it. It's a wonderful city, wonderful, wonderful city. So those are one of the ones. Yeah.
What's next for you personally, and what's next for the design studio?
I guess just consolidate, because you never finish consolidating yourself. So, sure. You know, keep on consolidating, keep on, you know, searching for excellence, you know, and being better at what you do constantly. And in terms of, you know, finding where is the new path that we want to take, you know, it's going to be very interesting because times are changing. They're sure are changing in a very fast pace. And the next decade is going to be, well, I don't know who can foresee it, but it's because it's so unknown. The advances that you encounter year after year, it's mm-hmm. it's accelerating on a curve that it's so hard to tell, you know, what's going to be around, how things are going to operate in a decade from now or two decades, you know. It's going to be interesting for one thing.
Which brings up a question I want to ask you. Artificial intelligence, and that's playing a part in multiple industries, and it's hitting our industry
of course.
As well. How do you see that kind of being integrated, and how is that going to help assist or take away from someone like you or me that is very mindset to pen and paper?
I guess we will just have to see, because for me, I see artificial intelligence as an incredibly powerful tool, but still it's in diapers. That's if I may say so, because it's been like, you know, just a couple of years that it has emerged, and it's so powerful that it's so hard to even grasp what it's going to be doing in 10 years from now.
True.
You know, it's going to be like it could be incredibly powerful, you know, and it's so much more than we can even imagine, you know, nowadays. And it's just going to be a thing of how you adapt to it and how you, mm-hmm. how you work and how you embrace it, you know, at the end of the day. But it's, there is certainly a little sense of the unknown where we're going, because I can't even, you know, I am always surprised at the next level that they were already able to achieve. Just the fact of the artificial intelligence, what it's doing today, it's pretty mind boggling, you know, and it's still in its inception, you know.
Well, besides your showroom, what else is next for you? What projects do you have coming up, and what custom pieces are you working on currently, as well as your own line?
Yeah, we're working on some pieces for our line to expand it further. Mm-hmm. A lot of interior design projects came about, so we're going to be very active in homes, mm-hmm. a lot of homes that have come about. So we're going to be active in it. We already have like 4 projects up and running in New York, and we have 3 projects up and running in Colorado, and we have 2 projects coming up in Los Angeles. We have one, certain things coming in Cabo, in the beach in Mexico, in Punta Mita, here in Guatemala. Mostly it's going to be a lot of residential, high-end residential. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be nice. It's our core. I would say it's our specialty, you know, to deal with high-end residential interiors. So that part is good, you know, it's on the what we know how to do. And together with that, of course, now we have the necessity to upkeep our showroom and to keep on presenting new stuff
right.
for the showroom. So we do need to feed that as well, you know, new stuff. So we're developing, as always, new products, like different dining room, a different coffee table, then something else. But it's all on that realm.
Fantastic. Well, Simone, is there anything else you want to add and share with us before we close out?
No, not really. I'm very glad that this happened, and wish you the best of luck. And yes, let's see how things turn around for everybody in the future.
Absolutely.
Yes.
New year.
Yes.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Thanks for tuning in to Beyond the Design. Subscribe for more inspiring conversations to our YouTube channel. Follow us on social media for updates and behind the scenes content. See you next time.
You're listening to a Pod for Good Media Network podcast. We are a network that provides podcasting production services and a supportive community in which podcasters can thrive. If you're a podcaster local in the Tulsa area, we would love to have your show on the network. If you're interested in starting one, we would love to help you get started. Find us online at podforgoodmedia.com and fill out our Pod With Us form. Happy podcasting.